From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Long before the Thanksgiving dessert plates were cleared, many holiday sales had already begun. Some started the day after Halloween. A lot online. Black Friday looked a lot less crazy some places this year. Cyber Monday looks almost year-round. This hour, On Point, American retailing. In this season and in a new age, you can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Were you out with the crowds this weekend, or has your shopping moved online? How's it changing? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Black Friday dead, maybe not as crowded as some other years this year. Here's television station KARE11 in Minneapolis talking with a shopper on Friday about her hassle-free shopping experience.
We did good. I've been doing this for 10 years. It's the easiest year I've had.
Well, maybe everybody's online. Here was Chris Gaines talking with NPR's Sonari Glinton about why she was in stores on Friday.
You kind of want to go out. You kind of want to see what there is to buy. And I mean, I went to Nordstrom's. Everything was gift wrap. So, you know, done deal. But online, I would say shopping, especially for myself, probably about 90%.
Got that? 90% online, and not just on a couple of big days. Here, 10 days ago, ABC News reporting on how holiday deals were already in full swing.
At Walmart, the sales have already been running since the day after Halloween. Target, for the first time ever, launching 10 days of Black Friday bargains starting the Sunday before Thanksgiving.
And shoppers following that, too. Here's Betsy McCoom talking with NBC's Today Show about how early she wraps up her shopping.
At this moment, I am 100% done with our Christmas shopping. And that is probably about 15 family members and about 40 other people that we shop for.
And that in October. With us right now from Port Washington, New York, is Marshall Cohen, retail industry analyst at the NPD Group. It's a big market research company, author of Buy Me, How to Get Customers to Choose Your Products and Ignore the Rest. Marshall Cohen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here.
And from Washington, Sarah Halzack joins us, national retail reporter for The Washington Post. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us.
Happy to be here, Tom.
So I don't know how much we can make of these early reports and numbers off of Black Friday and anticipation for Cyber Monday today and all the rest. But what do you see happening right now at this in this handful of days, Sarah?
Well, I think what we see is a continuation of what we've seen for several years now, which is that shoppers are really getting smart to the fact that they don't have to go out on Black Friday to take advantage of deals. There are good deals to be had over the whole holiday weekend, of course, from Thanksgiving to Cyber Monday, and there are deals to be had long before that. So it seems like foot traffic was either flat or perhaps down a bit in stores, but we saw strong growth online over the course of the weekend. So it seems like shoppers are still out in full force and wanting to get those Christmas gifts, but they're just doing it a little bit differently.
Marshall, does this handful of days still matter, or is everything spread out now?
Well, look, we certainly have seen the graying of Black Friday, and what we're seeing now, it's not Black Friday week, and it's not Black Friday week, it's Black November. So really, the consumer has been able to take advantage of so much of it. So does the weekend mean something? Actually, the answer is, even though it is diminishing in its size and importance, it still is very important. Whenever a retailer can get the top 10 days to be part of the equation, they're not going to ignore it. They're not going to walk away from it.
And the ratio of online to in-store these days, Marshall, what's happening?
Well, online this year is going to actually surpass the biggest channel in the history before, which was the mass merchants, the Targets, Walmarts, and Kmarts of the world. So online this year will be the biggest channel shopped. Keep in mind that what's happening is we have a very determined consumer. 20% of consumers told us this year, and that's a record, that they are going to take advantage of the deals well before the holiday. So online was a very big part of that equation.
Sarah, what does this mean for retailing and retailers? And as we've known it, as we've known them, I mean, all kinds of companies with stocks way down, Urban Outfitters and Dillard's and Nordstrom, and you just go right on down the list. Stocks really been taking a beating lately. What's that telling us?
Yeah, I think it's telling us that while the consumer's confidence is generally rising, there still are some things that they seem to be a little bit cautious about spending on. Some of the retailers that you cited there were apparel retailers, and Macy's, for example, said people just weren't buying coats and boots. It was warm weather, and they just didn't feel the need for it. They're judicious shoppers. They're careful shoppers. They don't do a lot of impulse buying, and that's what retailers are up against. The other interesting challenge that they're up against this holiday season and beyond all year round is that shoppers are increasingly shifting their spend to more experiential purchases, travel, dinners out, that kind of thing, or even things like your budget for the likes of Netflix or Hulu, right? These more experiential things that perhaps you didn't pay for before. Retailers are up against that. They're not only competing for share of your wallet with each other, but with these other interests in your life in a bigger way now, and that's going to be hard.
So maybe people are home knitting sweaters for each other instead of buying them, and then going out to dinner instead of shopping in the store, Marshall.
Well, what we've got is a consumer that has the ability to be able to do research beyond any time before. And they're smart. They're recognizing that what they need to do is figure out how they want to live their lifestyle. And it's really lifestyle that's driving these purchases. The committed consumer, if you think about it today, before you go out in the beginning of December, you have already spent well over 74% of your discretionary spending on things like cell phone commitments, auto loans, credit card loans, all these different things. When you add them all up, it takes a big chunk out of your ability to be able to go out and spend again on other things. So that's what retailers are in competition for. That's why you're seeing retailers being so challenged. It's that they're not doing a very good job of convincing us to spend what little discretionary income we have on the products that they're selling.
Sarah, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe experience is just as good as, supporting a factory that's churning out coal exhaust and making something we don't need. On the other hand, consumer spending, and a lot of it on material things, has driven a lot of the U.S. economy historically.
Yes, that's true. And it certainly will continue to. But you're right. The experience is going to become more and more important for retailers. And I think that's why you see a lot of them trying to pump up their in-store shopping experience this year. Certainly, they are still, of course, trying to improve the online checkout experience and all of that kind of stuff. But they are realizing if they want to compete with those more experiential type purchases, you have to make it an experience to come to the store. It has to feel festive. It has to feel engaging. Shoppers need to be able to test out products or try them on, or be able to use their mobile devices within the store to create an experience for themselves. And so a lot of retailers are making investments in that way to help them better compete for your dollars.
I mean, what does online shopping mean over time, Sarah, for the way we see one another or don't see one another in a retail environment, the way people actually find what they want and get it done? I mean, I have to admit, in my house, there was a little timeout from a frenzy of cooking on Thanksgiving Day where the laptop was opened and in, half an hour, an awful lot was accomplished with online ordering and the stuff started to appear on the front stoop the next day. That is a whole different world from heading out to the parking lots and the mall and fighting through all of that to bring home gifts to show love and appreciation and all the rest.
Yeah, that's true. And certainly there are a ton of people who did exactly what you just described on Thanksgiving Day. $1.7 billion was spent online on Thanksgiving Day, and that's a 25% increase over last year. So clearly more and more people are choosing to go that route. And even those who aren't purchasing are doing a lot of research online. So they're reading customer reviews, they're doing price checks, they're looking at promotional emails to sort of give them ideas for what they might want to buy. Online is certainly becoming a very entrenched part of the way we not only research our purchases, but make them, and that will only continue to grow over time.
What do you think that's going to mean over time, Marshall, for the volume of purchasing if people are doing more online instead of physically, and for profit margins for people in the business?
Well, there's two key factors here. Number one is recognizing that online does not generate the impulse purchase that an in-store visit does. Stores, They want you in the store. They need you in the store. When you're in the store, 45% of the purchases that happen during holiday time are on impulse. So if you're buying a sweater for your brother and you think how great the deal is, well, why not buy one for yourself? That happens in store much more often. Online, it only happens 22% of the time. So what stores must do is not be what they call omni-channel, which is the ability to be able to sell online, in-store, and through catalog and have different means for the consumer to get the product. That's important, but that's outdated already. What they need to do is be more about omnipresent. And what omnipresence is the ability to be able to drive traffic back to the store or from online to the store, or from the store to online, and have a continued dialogue, the ability to be able to turn one purchase into multiple purchases immediately and later on. That's what the future of retail is going to have to do to keep pace with the consumer's willingness and acceptance to go online shopping. And the second quicker part of it is just keep in mind that as the consumer matures into, that younger consumer matures into, they grew up online. They're very comfortable with it. They're only going to continue to drive the growth in online as we go. So that age segment between 25 and 45 that is now starting to come into some income or gaining some additional discretionary income, they're going to be very comfortable with shopping online and very comfortable with waiting a day or two to get the product.
Sarah, I wonder what that means over time. I mean, I saw a little bit over the weekend of malls that didn't look so crowded to me. And I've seen other big chains just closing up and going away lately. That group that Marshall's talking about, 25 to 45, by the time they're, 45 to 65, are we just not going to see the built retail environment out there that most Americans took for a given for the last century and more?
Yeah, the physical retail environment is definitely going to change. So there's a good likelihood that some retailers will have perhaps smaller footprints or a smaller fleet of stores than they do right now. Macy's, for example, has said it's going to be closing the stores because it has as many as it needs for a retail environment that increasingly relies on online sales.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the transformation of American retailing from Black Friday to Cyber Monday to what comes next. So much moving online, including right now in the holiday season, and the repercussions of that right now and over time. Everybody wants your attention. Here's H&M teaming up with singer Katy Perry for its holiday ads. Take a listen.
To all of you, happy and merry holidays.
Woohoo! Every day is a holiday, and here's Toys R Us CEO David Brandon in front of his Times Square store early Friday morning, talking with CNBC about how he was trying to attract shoppers.
Starting today, we have 20 pages in a circular full of values across all brands and categories, and so we've got a lot of reasons for people either to come into our stores or visit our website.
So come on, come on, come on. Marshall Cohen is with us from NPD Group, joins us from Port Washington in New York today, market research company there. Sarah Halzack is with us, national retail reporter for the Washington Post. You can join us. Are you online all the way now for your gift shopping, or halfway or most of the way? How has it changed the season when shopping is on the keyboard? Do you miss the hubbub, the decorations, the lights? And what's your strategy for the best price now? Shop early, shop late, follow Twitter for deals. Dan's calling from Boston. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. What do you see?
Hey, Tom. I've been a shopper for quite some time, worked in retail for many years, and I can honestly say this is one of the first years I didn't line up at 6 in the morning to freeze and wait outside to...
Why not, Dan? Why not? You just done with shopping, or are you doing it a different way?
Well, I think it's a buyer's market, honestly. I've found that online you can find a price compare, just as your two experts have been saying. And that being said, I have a really clear understanding of where the best prices are. So 90% of the time it's online and includes free shipping. So why wait in line to freeze and get excited to bump into a bunch of people when you can stay at home and enjoy Hong Kong?
But how do you know if it's really going to fit, let's say, if it's, a sweater or even a pair of gloves? I mean, there's so many moments when you're not sure online. You don't mind returning it, wrapping it up, sending it back, all that stuff?
Well, I could not agree more in terms of the fit part, but usually the return policy is quick. So if you need to turn it back around, you can, and they usually give you free returns if something doesn't fit. Especially with the clothing places.
Dan, all done with that, going heavy online, Of course, it's kind of amazing to think how much of the holidays in our consumer-driven society were built around all that store experience. We go to Jack in New Orleans. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Stores used to be like that in the 50s. You and I both remember when they used to have big displays in the front, and you'd go in there and there'd be elaborate Christmas decorations, holiday decorations. Now they don't have that. If they did that again, wouldn't that raise their overhead and pretty much price them out of somebody buying locally and not going online?
That's interesting. I can't say that I can remember the 50s, but I certainly remember people putting a lot of work and money into all that come-hither atmospherics. Marshall, can places still afford that? Is that part of what may go away as more of our activity goes online?
There's no question that the stores have tried to figure out how to minimize the additional overhead that holiday brings. The displays, the staffing, all the different things that made it special and unique have been cut back. And that's all part of the quest for higher profits and trying to manage through a lower margin market, meaning with all these discounts, all these doorbuster deals that they offer, the margins are lower. Therefore, their profits are lower. Therefore, they have to look at cutting back. You have to look at, you know, less stores. You have to look at less decoration. You have to look at less fanfare. And that does make the experience of shopping less exciting. In fact, some stores have even said, we're only going to do some of the big decoration in our flagship stores.
Sarah, that is so interesting when you think of how much of the kind of color and verve of the holidays. And often people shook their heads and said, oh my gosh, you know, too much, ridiculous, I don't like it. But it was there. It was there in great volume for a long time. If we turn to our keyboards and take it all home, maybe we do become that more home-focused, family-focused society, not so much the big hoopla of the retail environment.
Yeah, I think it's some retailers still are very much trying to invest in the experience of shopping and sort of bring back some of that flavor that Jack was talking about. Walmart, for example, is going to have in-store Santas this year, something it hasn't consistently done over the years. And they're going to add festive music, and they're even going to try to take shopper requests over the airwaves in some of the stores. So they're certainly in a place where they are trying to jazz back up that in-store experience and give you a reason to come and wander their aisles and spend time with them. Target is doing that as well. So, for example, in their home department, they, instead of just displaying things on shelves, they've tried to make these more Pinterest-worthy displays of how you might set up your dining room table, that kind of thing. So we do see some retailers trying to, you know, kind of revive a bit of that old-school magic of coming into the store and thinking that that might be a way to attract shoppers and breed some loyalty from them.
Santa back in the aisles of Walmart, but of course Walmart's also been thinking and talking a lot about its push online. Here was the CEO of Walmart, Doug McMillon. This was Bloomberg Business back in October, talking about how the company Walmart is positioning itself to compete with Amazon.
We had to build the digital platform. We had to create the fulfillment centers. We had to earn that. We're now getting closer to that point. We've now got the third most visited mobile app in retail in the country, and we've been known for a long time for price and assortment. Now we just have to deliver that in a different way.
Santa is in the house with the mobile app, getting the CEO's attention right there. Brian in Appleton, Wisconsin. Brian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So Thanksgiving Day, my wife and I, we invited a Chinese student over for Thanksgiving to give him that experience.
Good for you.
And he's really wanting to be immersed in our culture. So I said, would you like to go out and do Black Friday shopping with me? And so he's like, yes. So we went out and stood outside Best Buy for like 2.5 hours out in the freezing rain just to get inside, do some shopping. And I asked him about his culture, what they do, and he was telling me that on November 11th is their huge shopping day called Singles Day.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, what we do here in America makes absolutely no sense to him. He's like, everything is done online. We don't stand in lines like this or anything. And it just made me wonder, I'm like, because he's a young man and everything, I'm just wondering that if that is the way that we're going to be going, that no one will be standing in line, that everyone will do everything online in the future. In fact, right now I'm on my way to a friend's house because I have no internet at my place to do some Cyber Monday shopping myself.
Yeah,
so.
But Brian, if that should happen, if we go the China way, and they have their own reasons that they went that way, but How do you think that would change the way this country looks, the way we interact with each other?
Well, I think that we're already kind of seeing the way that we're not interacting with each other through social media and everything. The people will sit next to each other in coffee shops and not engage one another. They look at their cell phones and they text each other while they're sitting right across from one another. Right. I think it's going to... that's the way that we're going. I don't like it, but that's the way that our culture is moving.
So what's the point of going out to the store if you're just going to stare at your smartphone screen anyway? I mean, Sarah, you know, of course, there's a reason China does so much of its retailing online. I mean, they went from poverty times and Mao and all that to a boom at the same time that the internet was coming on stream. They never built out that huge, omnipresent retail infrastructure that the U.S. has. And yes, it's all online there right now, or so much of it online. If that would become something more like a norm in this country, what would it mean?
Well, I do think that it's a long way off that we would see something like that in our country. I think that's the most important thing. I mean, we are still at a point where total, overall, 93% of sales still take place in stores. And I talked to so many shoppers. I was out on both Thursday and Friday interviewing dozens of shoppers.
Yeah.
And the number of them who said something to me like, you know what, I came out to buy these 800 thread count sheets, but I wanted to touch them and just make sure they felt soft before I bought them. Or the number of folks who in the Best Buy store wanted to actually touch the laptop and feel the keyboard under their hands or see the resolution of that 4K TV and make sure it was really worth that eye-popping price tag. Culturally here, regardless of what's going on in China, culturally here, we still are in a place where a lot of people like the experience of going to stores. And online is definitely going to continue to chip away at that, no doubt, because it's so convenient. But I think that in-store will be a part of our culture for a very long time.
Chloe in Windham, New Hampshire. Chloe, thanks for calling. What do you know, Chloe?
Hi, Tom. I just thought that so many of the points that you made mirrored my experience this year.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be the kind of person who would never buy anything online. And then over time, if I knew exactly what I wanted, I might buy it. But this time, I decided not to go out at all except for this one place I go. And I decided to go for an experiential thing.
Okay.
So I got my parents a Roku, and I will buy them either Netflix or Hulu for the whole year. And I went online and...
Roku, like TV streaming.
Going on. Yes. And this is something that I'll have to, you know, sort of break them into because they're older, but they love to watch TV.
So where did you buy it? Is it delivered to the front door? What's up with it, Chloe?
Well, this was great because I just went online. It came up with Walmart having one. I called my local Walmart, and they said they didn't have any. And so I started calling, and then I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Walmart.com. And when I went on there, it said that I could have one at my local store. I could just have it tomorrow. So I paid. And then I printed out a form. It had a barcode on it. The next day I went in, I walked to the back of the store, I handed them the barcode, they scanned it, they gave me my thing, and I was done.
What about impulse buys while you were in the store? Did you buy a big soft bunny for your nephew or I don't know what?
I did. So I spent about $100. I bought another artificial tree that I had no plans on buying and more lights. So it was very clever of them to do that, even though they didn't have the product.
Yeah.
When I went looking for it, they found it for me, and they sent it there. So I spent about $100 that I would not have spent.
Chloe, that's great testimony. And you're back in the arms of Walmart after your sachet online. I love it. I mean, Marshall Cohen, everybody says that tech is the most vulnerable or open to the online purchase because you can see all the specs right there. You don't really need to touch it. And that seems where a lot of the online purchasing action is, Marshall.
Well, technology is the number one category purchased online. So it certainly bodes well for what you're saying. And the answer is yes. The technology industry is very online centric from the perspective of it's all about the specs of the product. You know, you want to look at it, how it looks and how it feels. So touching is a little bit less. When we talk about trying on product, where you talk about the visuals of product, then seeing it does mean more. So that's why technology does have a little bit higher level of penetration when it comes to online selling, as well as just the nature of who buys technology, younger, more online-centric anyway. So technologically advanced consumers are much more comfortable with buying technology online.
Sarah, you've got this number, Adobe, that keeps track of a lot of this, saying that, predicting anyway, that 76% of online sales during this holiday season will come from just 1% of items, and more than half of those from electronics. Big.
Yes. So it's a sort of staggering statistic, isn't it? And I think that means that a lot of the action will be around devices like large screen television, iPad Air 2, Xbox, that kind of thing. So what's interesting here is what that means for what retailers have to do strategically. I think what we all think is probably the smart strategy for an e-commerce site at this time of year is to have a lot of variety, right? To have a big plethora, a big smorgasbord of merchandise. Actually, what that stat shows is the importance of buying deep in a few specific items in your inventory that you think are going to be really big sellers, and really getting behind those and making sure you're not out of stock. I think I saw some data from over the weekend that out of stocks were up something like 200% online, suggesting that a lot of retailers could have made some more sales if they had bought more deeply into these few specific categories where where shoppers really wanted to spend their money.
I mean, but there too, we get so bottom line that that may all be true. I have no doubt that it is, but you may go out to look around and just see less variety to ogle before you get to a purchase. Cindy in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm 26 years old, and I have just done all of my Christmas shopping on Amazon while sitting on my couch drinking coffee this morning.
You did all your Christmas shopping this morning from the couch. How many items do you think roughly, Cindy, that was? Three, six?
About 15.
15. And it's all done, and it's all going to be shipped to your doorstep.
And I even have the boxes to wrap it in.
But what about, I don't know, the charm of driving to the mall and parking and listening to the music?
Well, also, you know, on a grad student budget, I get to kind of shop around and get the best prices for everything.
Hey, I appreciate that firsthand testimony. Sarah, is that doom for retailing as we've known it right there?
No, I don't think so. First of all, Cindy's making me look bad by having all of her holiday shopping done.
But you better get on the couch in your pajamas with a cup of coffee.
Right? But no, I don't think so. I think it just suggests that retailers need to adapt for shoppers like Cindy and for shoppers like Chloe, who called in earlier, who did that hybrid experience of making a purchase online and then going into Walmart and buying some additional things when she got into the store.
But what does adapt mean when Cindy gets 15 items, they're all from one purveyor, Amazon, and she never sets foot in the store? I mean, how do you adapt to that?
I mean, I think you need to step up your game online. You need to make, if you're a traditional retailer who has a large brick and mortar presence, you need to make your online offering more compelling. And that may be in terms of, you know, the actual merchandise on offer, your assortment, that may be in terms of price, or it may be in terms of service things like free shipping, free returns. And you just sort of need to think about what your specific value proposition is to customers and, you know, adapt what you're doing online to meet that. And it's not going to be easy, but I think a lot of the retailers are working hard at this, and we'll probably be seeing some big changes over the next few years.
Marshall, does that story, Cindy's out of Oklahoma, should it put the fear of God into everybody but Amazon?
What it does do is it puts the foot on the accelerator. It gets the stores to recognize that the model that they're using is outdated. They're selling product the same way they did from the 1600s when people walked into a dry goods store in a town that didn't even have a paved road.
Mm-hmm.
We can't keep selling that way. So what has to happen is you're going to see, in many cases, stores go from a cash and carry location to a showcase location. And a fancy way of saying that what's going to happen is you're going to be able to now go into a store and see 27 colors of that countertop jewelry KitchenAid mixer that, you know, 57% of people don't even know how to turn it on, but they want to put one on their kitchen counter. And what's going to happen is, instead of going into a department store today where they'd only have three colors
yep.
to choose from, you will be able to choose from all 27 colors. They may not stock it, and you may have to wait till tomorrow morning to get it, but that's what online does. So the stores will now become the place that you can go touch and feel and get delivery tomorrow. The stores must adapt to the future.
I just wonder how many of that showcase locations are going to be out there. How many miles are you going to have to drive to get to one if you get to one at all? Maybe people won't care. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
On Point is sponsored by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses made in America. They're engineered for comfort and long-lasting support with just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. Here's the great part. You can try one risk-free for 100 days with free delivery and returns. Go to casper.com/onpoint. That's casper.com/onpoint. And remember to use promo code ONPOINT at checkout to receive a special offer. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the transformation of American retailing this hour, from Black Friday to Cyber Monday to what comes next. So much moving online, including right now in the holiday season, looking at the repercussions of that, what people value, how they get it. Sarah Halzack is with us, national retail reporter for The Washington Post. Marshall Cohen is here, retail industry analyst at NPD Group. You can join us as well. How are you looking for gifts for your loved ones this year? Are you making them down in the wood shop or knitting them there by the picture window? What's the future of retailing look like? Does it look fun? Does it include stores? Julie writes to us. She says, I do my holiday shopping at local markets where people sell the things they make. And she's all about hashtag buy local. Dave says, I asked my fiance what she wanted for Christmas. She said, for you to be happy. I'm not sure where to get that. You know, a walk in the woods might do it, Dave. That would be very low carbon and very inexpensive. Julie's calling from Bloomington Normal, Illinois. Hi, Julie, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
I'm actually a small business retailer owner, and I'm not sure how it fits into your segment today, but just listening, we've kind of had to adapt, and we're pretty unique for our business.
What do you sell, Julie?
I have an optical boutique, optical shop.
Okay.
We sell prescription, non-prescription eyewear.
Yeah.
But on Black Friday, for the past 11 years, have done a Black Friday sale. We do it from, we first tried to compete with the early a.m., 5 a.m. stuff. Now we do it from noon to 5.
That sounds much more civilized. I can't see picking out eyewear at 5 a.m., but maybe I'm off.
At noon, believe it or not, we usually have 25 to 35 people waiting in line when we unlock our door.
Are you offering giant discounts or why?
We do the first hour 30% off anything in stock, and the next 2 hours 25%, and the balance of the day 20%. But we had a gentleman that was in line. It was raining in Bloomington, Illinois on Friday.
Okay.
He was at 10:15 waiting for our noon opening because he knew what he wanted. He didn't want someone else to buy it. And the catch is it has to be there. We can't special order if you want a frame, and I got a frame in different color.
Yeah.
You know, that day it has to be.
So he wanted something. He'd seen it on your rack. What do you see coming down the road as more younger shoppers may look, even for eyewear, online, Julie? How are you going to deal with that?
Well, I think eyewear is a pretty tough one. If you're happy with, I can sort of see out of it. Yeah, it kind of fits. Yeah, it's sort of my size. It works. Mm. But if you're at all have a little bit more of a complex prescription, you need a little bit more personal attention, buying online's pretty tough. And we are a little higher end, more of a luxury eyewear market, our shop. So we aren't buy one, get one. We aren't get a pair for $49 and wear it till it falls apart in 3 months and buy another pair.
And you've got them lined up outside the door on Black Friday. And for your business, we're glad for that. I mean, Sarah, what about, are there niches here that look invulnerable to the online onslaught or not really ultimately?
Yeah, there are certainly some categories where the penetration online has been lower. I think grocery is actually the biggest example of that. I think it's something like only 1 or 2% of grocery sales happen online. And whereas a category like electronics, as Marshall was talking about earlier, has been heavily penetrated online, and toys, for example, there's big sales online. So there are some places where this online revolution is coming to us a little more slowly.
Patty in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Patty, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. I'm just wondering what the effect of all of this is on local businesses, the small shops and, you know, the local places.
And you mean the effect predominantly of online ordering, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's pick it up. Marshall, I mean, Walmart had its effect over the last few decades, drove a lot of small shops and shopping areas into real difficulty. What about the online era that's so big right now? What does it do to local retailers, smaller ones?
I get asked this question a lot by a lot of the retailers that I work with. And one of the key answers I always give is, where would you rather buy a computer? If you went in to buy a laptop or a desktop computer system, would you rather buy it for a little less money from a big box retailer where the guy who's selling it to you just literally an hour earlier was stocking lamps? Or would you rather go to a small retailer, a local retailer, who's going to be there every day waiting for you to come in to help you figure out how to use this product and be there to support it? So the answer really is, as long as you continue as a small retailer to provide service and to provide local flavor that big retailers can't do, the consumer is very willing to be able to utilize that. And other than discount-centric consumption, the small retailer has a bigger and brighter future than even the bigger retailers.
If they've got the expertise, if they've got the volume to keep enough on the floor to stay open and all the rest, Marshall.
Well, that's certainly true. And that's why when we talked earlier about the ability to be able to offer wider variety of product in specialization, that's the key. The ability to be able to be an expert to buy the product from. When we hear callers talking about specialty retailer, and being able to be an expert there, that's a very, important part of the equation, feeling comfortable that this is the right place to go. And that means that the retailer has to do a better job in making the consumer feel comfortable and confident that their expertise is there. It's no longer as simple as being a specialty retailer with the product. You have to have the product knowledge and the ability to offer assurance to the consumer that this is the right place to go.
You know, Sarah, I wonder sometimes, though, if between Walmart and Staples and Target, a lot of that experience and expertise wasn't knocked out of the local retail scene many years ago now. And now along comes full-on online purchasing for the knockout blow.
It's possible, but I do think Marshall's onto something in terms of the potential power of the small retailer in the era that we're in right now. One thing you see some of the mass retailers doing, actually, is trying to have more local flavor in their stores. Nike, for example, is trying to make sure it has art from local photographers in some of the stores it's newly opening. Macy's has been, for several years now, trying to localize its assortment and empower more regional managers to make decisions about what kinds of clothes are in the store. And we have other retailers like Kit and Ace that are also trying to go in this more local feeling direction. So it seems to suggest that shoppers really do still like an experience where it feels authentic to their neighborhood and individual and special instead of cookie cutter. And so if you have mass retailers trying to capitalize on that, you can see how there would be some opportunity there for the small guys.
I mean, maybe so, though. I remember effectively a lot of people getting herded into Walmart or Staples as mom and pop stationers and local stores went away. And now if we get more retail closures, I wonder about being, herded online. I mean, some may be delighted with that, but if you want that texture of the local, not to go mass, I wonder what will be there. Ella in Lexington, Kentucky. Ella, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Shopping local is definitely a trend I've seen amongst my friends. And something really cool that's happening here is sort of a hybrid, because there are a lot of local handmade artisans that sell things on Etsy, but then also they don't have a store front. And so what's happened is that there are a lot of local markets popping up where they pay anything from $25 to $100 for a space for them to set up a booth, and they sell their things there. And so then it makes it more of an experience where you get together with your family or your friends and you go shopping to this one-time market. And they always make it very festive, like with music, food, drinks, and you get to touch and feel everything you want to buy and talk to the people who made it. And it's been really fun. It's been going on for a few years now here, and you get to meet everyone, and then you sort of build a relationship with these artisans, and, you know, then you get to give it these presents to your friends.
And yeah, no, it sounds wonderful, and the artisan's right there with you. That sounds really terrific. But how many weeks a year is that open, Ella? I mean, I've seen more of that as well, but is that just seasonal? Is it like a what they call in Europe Christmas market kind of thing?
No, there's actually both. There are quite a few that go year-round. There are some outdoor ones that close during the winter, but then there are a lot more indoor ones that open up during the winter, and then there are some that do it every month and some that go every other week and things like that. So, and it also makes it more of a mix then, because not every vendor is going to be at every one, so you get to see the different jewelry vendors and different t-shirt vendors and things like that.
Got it. Ella, keep at it. I'm sure those small artisans in Lexington, Kentucky must really love you for that. Alexandra in Watertown, Massachusetts. Alexandra, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd give a little bit of information in terms of what my shopping experience is so far this Christmas season, because I feel
okay.
Like I'm a little bit of a combination of all the stuff you're talking
about. Let's hear it. How do you do it?
Basically, I do like to tend to go to stores and sort of feel things like you were saying and actually check them out in person. But in this case, for example, I went to a department store and I checked out a nice scarf and I was able to feel it and see if that I like it. But I'm actually buying it from their website today because it's much cheaper for, you know, the sales and Cyber Monday and all that stuff.
Was it the same store's website, Alexander, as where you touched it or not?
Yes. Yes, so, it is. In this case it is. Although I do tend to do research online, and like you were saying, and see whether it's cheaper somewhere else. But in this case, it's the same store.
So in a way, they get both from you, except they get a smaller profit. I mean, Marshall, how common is it for retailers to have a higher price at their own website than they have in the store? What does that mean?
Well, what they recognized is they use the online vehicle as a way to make sure that you don't leave them in total. So, for example, let's use that scarf as a great example. It was, you know, viewed, it was touched, it was desired, but it wasn't purchased. Okay, so instead of losing that customer, what they do is they offer it for a better price online.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their way of saying, let's not walk them, let's keep them. So they're trying to figure out how do they do that. The key is now to understand how do we retain her as a customer so that we constantly have, you know, that the same people coming back and buying more and more and more. The key question is, did she buy anything in addition when she bought the scarf online, or which she would have normally done if she was in the store and purchased in the store? And that's the part of the equation that retail hasn't figured out yet.
Chris in Detroit, Michigan. Chris, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
It seems as though the online retailers have done a much better job getting into brick and mortar than brick and mortar has done in engaging technology. I feel like when I walk through the door, I might as well leave my phone in the car because it does me no good when I'm in the store. You know, I mean, for me, especially if I'm buying these commodities, I go into a store, and the thing that I like most about Amazon is being able to look at other people's opinions and looking at the reviews, and I know that's very important to other buyers. And when I go into the store, I can actually bring my Amazon app in and you know, ping a UPC, scan a UPC, and it will bring me right to the product on Amazon. But when I go into Target, like I used the Target website to buy a gift for my kids the other day.
Okay.
I go to Target. I walked around for 15 minutes trying to find someone to help me. Finally, I found someone, and they had a little device, and it told them it's on, you know, aisle 6 and bin G. Why can't I have that technology on my phone when I go into the store?
So even when you're in the store, you want a kind of internet-driven data envelope around you, Chris. You want the store to provide that. Even if maybe that would take you out of the store. Maybe that just means you're going to go buy it somewhere else. Maybe they want you off your phone.
I'm looking for other people's experience buying this product. I mean, when I go to Amazon, especially with, I mean, this sounds ridiculous, but I shopped for an iron a year ago. I went in, I looked at these 15 irons at Meijer, a retailer near here, and I didn't know which of these irons did other people have good success with.
Yeah.
I had to go to Amazon to get other people's opinion.
That is really interesting. Sarah, thank you, Chris, for calling from Detroit. Sarah, you get this picture of people who are accustomed to living with a kind of bubble of data around them all the time. And Chris wants it, even when there's that dumb lineup of irons. And I don't mean in a disparaging way, but He wants everything to talk information to him.
Yeah, and there are a lot of shoppers out there like Chris right now. That's a very common case. In fact, we're seeing more and more in certain surveys that people would rather interact with their smartphone than a sales associate, which may sound a little sad, but is true, especially among millennials, to help guide their in-store shopping experience. And so I think Target would actually probably be pretty disappointed to hear about Chris's experience there, because I know them and many other large retailers are really trying to work to build their mobile apps specifically for this purpose, knowing that one of the most common use cases is using it while wandering around the store. So many of them are trying to build in store maps, exactly like what Chris was describing, where you could say, where are the cotton balls? And it could tell you exactly how to get there. Or they're doing things like Walmart has added a mobile check-in feature this year, where you're supposed to be able to check in from the parking lot to say you're there to pick up your online order, and then it will be ready right away for you. So it's a very seamless in and out. So no doubt, retailers are really trying to cater to exactly the behavior that Chris describes.
Sarah, you know, Marshall's talking about how retailers can get people to buy more and more. And it's kind of irony here. We've got this climate talks going on in Paris right now. Part of really reining in all our, you know, carbon emissions is maybe buying less over time, maybe more of that experience and less of buying material things that take a bunch of dirty energy to produce. I mean, you're the national retail reporter. Are these colliding arcs here that these two interests are on? Our economy runs a lot on consumer spending, but consumer spending drives the kind of energy use that people are trying to drive down in Paris.
Sure. And I think the thing to remember, though, as we're talking about Black Friday and Cyber Monday, is while that's probably a consideration over the long haul, it's not something that's really top of mind for shoppers this time of year. And I don't think it's particularly driving their behavior. I don't think the fact that we see shoppers moving towards these more experiential things might ultimately be good for the carbon footprint, but I'm not sure it's why they're doing it necessarily.
You guys are great to be with us today. We're trying to visualize what this future looks like, and it is definitely changing rapidly right now. Sarah Halzack is national retail reporter with The Washington Post. It's always good talking with you, Sarah. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks, Tom.
Marshall Cohen at NPD Group in Port Washington, New York. You're terrific, Marshall. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Listeners, we wish you a satisfying exchange of tokens of esteem, whether they are off a shelf or who knows. Yeah, maybe you knitted it by the wood stove, and that's great, too. You can continue the conversation. You can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jupp, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica. With help from Fatima Tanis and Dave Tarantino, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.